Atheist Nomads, episode 253, The Patron Saint of Doubters.
The podcast you're about to listen to includes cursing and talking about hoo-haws. Please be advised.
Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. I am Dustin. Joining me as usual is Lauren.
Hello.
And after a bit of a break, we have Justin back.
Hello. We just needed to see other guests and podcasts for a while.
Yes.
That's all.
Yeah. and don't worry, we have Lauren here, so she will keep Justin and I from geeking out about wood and woodworking. And
we are not going to talk about the new saw that I got today. That's not happening.
So. Yeah. Please tell me you got that out of your system on the drive over.
Yes, of course.
Excellent. And I'm sure he told you about his drill press and stuff that he got.
Oh, yeah, yeah, we've gone over all that. No risk of any of that.
All right, good. All right, so we also have the baby here. Little Kylie is in one of those standalone little jumperoo things. So you might hear her squeal in delight once in a while, because she loves that thing.
And this girl has a face for TV, not radio, for sure.
Yeah.
Beauty, oh my goodness.
And she's also wearing her Made in Vagina onesie. Very cute. Right. She's in love with you, Justin.
All right, let's go ahead and jump into Dustin off the degree. And listeners, we are making a little tweak to the format. We'll see if you even notice. So why did I say it?
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway.
Just bringing attention to yourself now.
So high churches are the ones that follow the liturgical calendar, where each church service is tied to events in the life of Christ and other significant churchy events. They also tend to recognize saints as a special class of dead believers, and this is different from the low churches, which don't follow a specific calendar. They leave it up to the pastor to figure out what to preach about, and they also believe in the sainthood of all believers.
So would high church examples be like Greek and Russian Orthodox?
Yeah, the Orthodox churches, the Roman Catholic Church, the Episcopalian, depending on which type of Lutheran. Some are high church, some are low church. By the time you get into like Baptist, Methodist, and Adventist, and all those groups, they're all very low church. Then there's Mormons that are just weird. but they would also be low church.
That's your line for weird.
Oh, they're all weird, but yeah. So then with this special class of dead believers, in some cases they're martyrs. But in all cases, they have some kind of a special in with God. The Roman Catholic and Eastern Orthodox churches kind of take this to an extreme, and they don't pray to God, since the average Christian isn't good enough to get his attention. Instead, they pray to the saint, and then the saint will talk to God on their behalf, and if they're lucky, God will allow the saint to work a miracle.
That's so weird. I mean, religion is weird anyway, but that's just like, why are you making this harder on yourself?
Well, it's like one more level of hey, buy this bullshit.
Bureaucracy. You know? Like, religious bureaucracy.
Yeah. It's like a contest of how much can we make them
I received your prayer, but I did not receive it in triplicate. Mm-hmm. You need to keep a copy with the yellow form. I need the pink and the blue form. So yeah.
Plus need the sponsor.
Can't do that.
It needs an executive level sponsor before it can be even considered.
Vogon.
Yeah. So like all the apostles are saints. Mary's an extra special saint. Early martyrs, the early church
Joan
fathers.
Joan of Arc, right?
Yes, but she's not one of the early ones. She's a very late one.
The one I think of as of a martyr. I always just think of her.
She's only been a saint for 400 years.
Mother Teresa!
I just think of Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey or Excellent Adventure. That's like the only thing that comes to mind.
That show keeps popping up in this podcast. It's hilarious.
Well, a couple weeks ago, Chris Matheson came back on.
Oh.
So, yeah. So then if somebody's a candidate for sainthood, especially in the Roman Catholic Church, they have to go through a vetting process. Now, of course, you have to first be dead. Generally, they want you dead for about a generation. So 20, 30 years.
Long enough for the legend thing to kick in.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, oh, you can't really go back and prove that this person didn't do that.
They have fast tracked both John Paul II and Mother Teresa because a lot of people loved them and wanted them quick, and they also wanted to take some of the light off of the church for not handling the sex abuse scandal and Benedict being an asshole and all of that. But
more like Benedict.
Once you're starting to be viewed as a candidate, they have to get reports of miracles, and then they start investigating those miracles, and you need at least one confirmed miracle.
Investigate, in air quotes.
Yes, to be beatified. That's a saint light. And then you need a second confirmed miracle to be full-on saint.
So there should officially be zero saints if reality had anything to do with this.
Now, I don't think that that's true. I think that especially the early saints are legit saints, because without the scientific rigor that we have now, that stuff looked like magic.
Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. At least in the periods before the testing,
statues crying blood and that kind of crap. Not really. But you know, somebody cures somebody by using was basically shamanistic magic.
Which, like, one of Mother Teresa's was, or John Paul II, or both. It's people in very poor areas in the developing world, often Latin America, because there's lots of Catholics there. A woman with brain cancer, she was going through treatment and had a picture of Mother Teresa and a candle burning in front of it, and they were praying to Mother Teresa every day, and then eventually the cancer was gone.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, she had terminal brain cancer and went into remission. That happens. That's well known, well understood, not miraculous.
But it looks good.
But yeah, I was going to say, it's very convenient.
So then, once somebody becomes gets recognized as a saint, it's not that the church is making them a saint, it's that the church is recognizing their sainthood, because obviously they have that status with God to be worthy of being prayed to.
They were a saint all along. We just recognize it now.
Yeah. They're God's best friends. And then, when they
God's grant, buddies.
The God squad.
So then when they grant sainthood, that's them telling the rest of the church that they can pray to that saint. The Catholics have a very formal process for creating saints. They seem to try to keep a constant flow of saints every few years. Episcopalians,
like Buddy Jesus,
tend to not really push that much or be all that big into the saints, as you know, it's like mostly with the old ones.
Yeah, I grew up Lutheran mostly, and we didn't recognize saints at all. So.
I don't, except for if they're, you know, in a hospital.
Well, and
but my stepmom, her parents, they did, like the church they came from. So
now Lutherans, there some Lutherans are high church with following the liturgical calendar, but Lutherans are, you know, Martin Luther was the one who started the sainthood of all believers. So Lutherans are very much, saints are not special people. Saints are all believers.
Okay.
And being deterministic, they believe saints are those who God preordained to be saved. So God picks who is a saint, gives them faith and grace.
Good system.
And if you're not picked
really
to be a
no
saint,
well, if you're Lutheran, it's a great system.
If God chooses you to be saved, then yeah, it's a nice system.
That means that he's already chosen people to not be saved, and
God,
that's kind
has,
of a dick move.
Oh, yeah, in their minds, God,
well,
has chosen
to,
us.
Oh, it's justice, right?
It's hard to read the Bible and come to any interpretation of it where there aren't some pre-hell bound people already, no matter what they do. So
actually, it's hard to read the Bible
and
come
up
with an
hell.
Idea of hell.
Yeah, but I suppose the people that won't be, the hell thing, you know what I'm talking about, though. The like the 144,000 of Jehovah's Witness, the people that will be with God after that, that'll have the eternal life or whatever like that. Like,
yeah,
there's all, it's impossible to come away with some interpretation. There aren't people who are going to just simply either cease to exist or go to hell versus people who are going to have eternal life.
Saved versus not saved. That there is definitely,
I don't know how to
distinction.
Speak very well, but that was my attempt.
Okay. So then once somebody becomes a saint, they are generally closely identified with a place organization or cause. Mother Teresa, of course, had an organization she came from. John Paul II is closely identified with his hometown. Organizations will pick saints to align with, such as locally here in Boise, St. Alphonsus. Now, it's interesting that the local Catholic high school is Bishop Kelly High School. It's named after a bishop, not a saint, because most Catholic schools are also named after saints.
Right,
because
there's St. Mary's downtown as well.
Yeah, St. Mary's.
But then I don't think that's a high school.
Churches tend to be, Catholic churches tend to be named after saints. And by naming your organization in honor of the saint, you are trying to get that saint's protection.
You're like, hey, look, we built you a building.
Uh-huh.
Sounds pretty like Greek and Roman and everything.
Paganistic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really weird.
I really like the one in Idaho Falls, the Catholic church there, because it looks like a standing rib roast. So they were like probably really hungry when they're like, maybe St. Mary would like something to eat.
And then some saints also become the patron of certain traits that they're known for. One example is Jude, the patron saint of lost causes, which is why St. Jude's is the organization that helps raise money to help take care of kids with cancer and do research for kids with cancer. Patron saint of lost causes. Kids with cancer, often lost causes.
That is so sad.
It really is.
That takes on a whole sadder meaning.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And our focus for today, Thomas, the patron saint of doubters.
Yeah.
Oh, that's my guy.
Yeah, doubters and skeptics.
Now, not officially the patron saint of skeptics.
Oh, is that somebody else?
No, there isn't one.
There isn't one. Okay.
Skeptics don't get a patron saint. Skeptics are going to hell. Yeah, that's just the simple way on it. Non-believers don't get a patron saint because non-believers are going to hell.
Oh.
But doubters, yes, doubters can, because you can be a doubter and still be a good Catholic. So, Thomas is...
That sentence doesn't work in my brain properly, but I'll go with it.
If you live with cognitive dissonance, you are suffering.
I agree with that.
And in the Catholic mind, suffering is good.
Yeah.
By you suffering, you are earning bonus points with Jesus, because Jesus suffered for you, and so you're suffering for him.
Okay, I was like, he suffered for you, so he wants to see you suffer.
Yeah, it kind of sometimes seems like that too. Yeah.
It's like, I was poor when I was raising my kids, so now I'm gonna go and I'm gonna take everything out of your bank account until you're like 40, because I want you to feel it. Like,
feel it. Take that.
So with Thomas, he doesn't show up much in the Bible. Doesn't really show up all that much in tradition either. So I'm going to read the verses about him from the Bible, because
there's so few that you can just read it here on the show.
There's five.
Aw.
It's five verses.
Go, Thomas.
John 20, starting at verse 24. Now, Thomas, one of the 12, called the twin, was not with them when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see his hands and the mark of the nails, and place my fingers into the mark of the nails, and place my hand into his side, I will never believe."
Holy crap. I'm sorry, that was just really graphic.
Really graphic, but he wanted...
Dude, but kind of my hero.
He wanted empirical evidence.
Oh, Thomas.
8 days later, his disciples were inside again, and Thomas was with them. Although the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be unto you." And then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and see my hands, and put your hand... Or put out your hand and place it in my side. Do not disbelieve, but believe." Thomas answered him, "My Lord, my God." Jesus said to him, "You have believed because you have seen me. Blessed are those who have not seen me and yet have believed."
You almost need a warning that this is going to get erotic.
Like that. And that there's kind of a clincher. He's like, yeah, okay, now I've proven myself to you, but you shouldn't have really needed that.
Yeah.
It was kind of a backhanded compliment.
Well, it wasn't even backhanded.
It wasn't even a compliment. It was just, he's like, see, told ya.
Yeah. Based on this story, Thomas should have believed, despite the fact that assuming any of the story is real, You have a bunch of people who are in the depths of despair, probably not sleeping well, not eating well. Actually, they're all destitute anyway. They've wasted their lives. They've ruined their lives, and they're fucked. That is a really good recipe for hallucination.
You know, it's not even that. It's, I mean, people nowadays, if they're desperate, they'll find somebody to follow cult-like.
But so you have 11 people who all had a hallucination, and they try to tell the other, yeah, we saw him. And who in their right mind is going to believe that? 11 desperate people saying they saw somebody that you watched die?
Yeah, a bunch of teenagers probably convinced themselves.
It's absurd. Peer pressure. It's absolutely absurd. And he was the smart one.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely reinforces that whole mindset of using reason and logic is dangerous. Mm-hmm. That's the way to damnation, you know.
Yeah, he should have been damned. Right. Cuz I mean, the whole point of freaking God is like faith, right? So mm-hmm. if he was like not willing to believe for no particular reason, then it seems like he got off easy.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah. Still my hero.
But yeah, patron saint of doubters.
Place my hand onto his bloody stump, or else I will not believe.
And we're going to take a break, and then we'll be back with news. Atheist Nomads is proudly brought to you by listeners just like you. You can find out how you can become a patron at patreon.com/atheistnomads. That's patreon.com/atheistnomads. The state of Arizona is working on their educational standards. And, you know, Arizona is one of those states that if there's something crazy and shitty happening in politics, they're kind of on that list, along with, you know, Florida,
Idaho,
Mississippi, Idaho,
Texas,
Oklahoma,
yep.
Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
So this process has been led by the state superintendent of public instruction, as it should be, who has led a campaign to remove evolution from the science education standards. She took the standards that educators wrote and she selectively edited out evolution. So she took references to, you know, actually using the word evolution and replaced it with changes over time and other euphemisms.
Oh, I hate that.
And this is less than a year after she was advocating for introducing religious ideas into biology class.
What? Biology?
Uh-huh. Creation.
Ugh.
Or intelligent design, as they like to call it.
Yeah, I got a lot of that in seventh grade. Nobody needs that shit.
It's like the not death pangs necessarily, but it's these lashings out of all the conservative states, you know, where as more reasonable mindset has taken hold, they just keep trying to gain as much ground as they can. It's like, I mean, until people in their districts and whatnot figured out how do you combat it?
You know, in her case, it's the state.
Yeah.
She was elected by the state of Arizona.
Yeah.
And
that's what I'm saying. I mean, like if you're a non-believer in Arizona, what can you do? You know,
well, public comment.
Yeah.
Get your comments in quick. There isn't much time left. The link in the show notes will have links to places where you can do that. Now, okay. So part of what she did was normal. Educators write the standards and they submit them to administrators who edit for clarity and edit grammar, try to make it a little bit easier to understand. What they don't normally do is make substantive changes to the standards, because the curriculum process is you take the experts in the field and you have them write, what do kids need to know by this time about this field? That's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. I mean, there's just got to be some way to fix it so that you can't just have unreasonable things take place in the education system.
Yeah. And okay, so for one example, the original standards had instructed the students to, quote, gather and communicate evidence on how the process of natural selection provides an explanation of how new species can evolve. This was changed to providing evidence on, quote, the processes by which a species may change over time in response to environmental conditions. That was completely flipped around. She's pushing creationism.
Oh, yeah.
In the way she's rewriting the science curriculum. There's parts where she changed, talk about evolution as the theory of evolution.
Not understanding what theory actually means in scientific sense.
Right, yeah. Playing on the colloquial understanding.
Learn the difference between hypothesis and theory, please. Creationists, please.
Yeah, yeah. And, okay, I don't have the best grasp on it, but facts and laws are the observable things that happen. The theories are the explanation of how those things happen. Evolution is a law. It is a fact. It happens. It is observed.
Right.
Natural selection is the theory to explain it. No different than gravity. Gravity is something that we observe happening. How that works in quantum mechanics is the theory to explain it. Wait, no. How it works in special relativity. Quantum mechanics is just weird. Federal officials have lost at least 1,475 migrant children.
That was the initial headline. The term lost is a little misleading there.
Okay.
Like they sat them down somewhere walked off without picking them back
more
up.
More like over the year, they kind of lost track of them. So they weren't able to check in with them. They didn't know exactly where they were. They think that most of them are probably with their families who are hiding so they don't get deported. So it's kind of a good thing that they're lost, quote unquote lost. However, there have been a few that were set up with some human traffickers, and that's the heartbreaking one. So these kids were forcibly taken from their families and then basically sold off.
Yeah. So,
and even if that happened to just one kid, that's one kid too many. Uh-huh. So,
yeah.
And whether they're back with their families in hiding or with human traffickers, what kind of a federal agency are you running that you can't keep track of children?
Yeah.
Now, this is worse than just a couple of agencies involved. There's a bunch of agencies within the federal government involved in this.
Yeah, well, and when you were saying, I mean, when you're talking about how did it happen, it's like if we've learned anything about our federal government, it's that not being very well organized or administrated is kind of ubiquitous. It's mm-hmm. That's the status quo. That's
it's turf battles, and they have very narrowly defined focuses. So Customs and Immigration Enforcement is taking them in. Customs and Immigration Enforcement is not authorized to take care of minor children. So they have to hand them off. Okay, there are also some very disturbing pictures that have come out from some of the customs and immigration detention centers that they have kids in. Absolutely disgusting.
Oh yeah, sleeping in dog shelters and they just weren't built for that.
Cots with kennels with cots. So they hand them over to Department of Health and Human Services. Department of Health and Human Services is supposed to be overseeing programs, not actually taking care of children. So they have to then get them to somebody who can take care of them. The Office of Refugee Resettlement was also involved. There's too many.
Basically,
many opportunities.
Yeah.
And we never should have touched them. Mm-hmm. They should have stayed with their families. And that was ridiculous. Somebody made the call to separate minors from the adults. And this is what happened.
Yeah. The detention center, that's a different case where they're not being separated from their parents. These are kids that are coming across the border unaccompanied.
Oh, okay.
Their parents are sending them across the border. They get picked up. Where's your parent? Oh, nowhere. All right, let's lock you up.
Yeah.
Man.
But I can't help but think, God, how incredibly desperate would you have to be to do that to your kid in the first place? I mean, some of these people are coming up from Guatemala and stuff. It's like, ugh.
We've talked about the House chaplain, Patrick Conroy, a couple of times, and he's back. Apparently, he has successfully reneged on his resignation.
Oh, good for him. Kind of?
And
wait,
is,
I'm conflicted.
And is currently being sued by the Freedom From Religion Foundation and a couple other organizations. Center for Inquiry, American Atheists are all joining in on filing briefs. And this is all because Father Conroy did not allow Dan Barker to give an invocation before the house. He allows religious clergy.
Yeah.
But won't allow the roughly the closest thing that we have to a non-religious clergy.
Yep.
Filing a lawsuit, it is currently before Circuit Court of Appeals. This is nuts.
Yeah. Why can a non-believer not give an invocation? I mean, is it a specific religious thing that's the only reason for it? Because then why is it being done?
Yeah, they're arguing in the lawsuit that this is obviously discrimination on the basis of religion and is unconstitutional. No duh.
Yeah. I'd like to see. Do you know, is there any record of them letting Muslims give any sort of invocation for things? Oh, okay. Uh-huh. All right. So
Muslims, Buddhists, Hindus.
That doesn't scare them. That's surprising.
Now, this is where we need the Satanic Temple to jump in. Lucian Greaves needs to give an invocation before the house.
Yes. I love that whole setup, how you know, and people are like, oh, they worship Satan. It's like, you don't know what you're talking about. Uh-huh. No, but they sure are glad you think they do.
Yeah. An author by the name of Paul McGuire, who writes about the end times, had an appearance on Jim Baker's television show, where he advocated that Trump is the victim of spiritual warfare that's being waged against Trump by Luciferian advanced beings who use supernatural multidimensional power to control the world.
What?
Yes, Luciferian advanced beings are using supernatural multidimensional power to wage a spiritual war against President Trump.
I swear Mark Maron did a joke about this on his Netflix thing that I watched the other night. I swear it was like the things that before you would just, they would make your head explode if you heard them said. And now you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I can see that, you know, that they're just, that they're even being voiced, that they're even getting a space to be aired, you know?
Yeah. It's the crazy thing here is, you know, what he's describing is, and he goes on, the physical battles that we see in our world and nation right now are the direct manifestation of the spiritual battles going on in the invisible realm. There are people very high up in what is called the globalist occult or globalist Luciferian rulership system. And this rulership system consists of what used to be called the Pharaoh God Kings. It's what Aldous Huxley called the scientific dictatorship. And there are advanced beings who know how to tap into supernatural multidimensional power and integrate it with science, technology, and economics.
So he's quoting Aldous Huxley in that regard as like a source of evidence. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's
what other he's... what other science fiction does he want to use as evidence for this thing? It's nuts.
This is what he's saying, is that everybody opposing Trump is colluding with demons.
Yeah. And so obviously all of Trump's behavior that have a record of, you know, whether on paper, videotape or audio tape, mm-hmm. over the last 40 years of him just being a filthy pig of a human being. That's all just this demon warfare, right? Like,
yep,
I mean,
apparently.
That because I mean, otherwise he's a virtuous man, you know, who should be in that position. Mm-hmm. That seems to be the logic to me. That's amazing. The lengths that I've been trying to get my conservative friends who voted, or my Christian conservative friends who voted for Trump, to explain to me how they can feel even remotely good as a Christian by voting for him, and they almost shut down. I mean, it's they can't complete sentences. It's like the circles they're running in their head to try to figure it out themselves are so obvious. It's man.
Yeah. Oh, it really is.
Luciferian High Council. Great.
Well, Franklin Graham didn't want to get left out, and he has now, in a Twitter meltdown, of course, in response to Rebecca Dallet winning a 10-year seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court in a special election, he said, "Big government special interests flooded Wisconsin with disheartened facts and misinformation. Next, they'll target me and work to undo our bold reforms. We need to keep moving. Hashtag WI forward. Make sure a hashtag blue wave of outside special interest monies don't take us backwards." Okay, that sounds relatively reasonable. Then he said, "Wisconsin just lost a seat in its state Supreme Court to a progressive judge. In my opinion, if Christians had come out to vote, the seat wouldn't have been lost. It's not the time to be silent. It's time to make positive change for our children and grandchildren." He continued, "Christians should be aware of candidates who call themselves progressive. Progressive is generally just a code word for somebody who leans towards socialism, who does not believe in God, and who will likely vote against godly principles that are so important to our nation."
Interesting.
Liberal progressive? Must be an atheist.
Must be an atheist, even though how many liberals are in on the federal level or even on the state level are about atheists? Like none. There's a few in the whole country, like less than a dozen, I would imagine.
It's
what, propaganda? Like just a fear tactic?
It's pure propaganda.
Yep.
It is.
Socialism is godlessness. Liberalism is socialism. You know, all these false equivalences.
You know, there's. It's been, for quite a few years now, the right wing and Christianity have been pretty closely linked. That's still a relatively new thing. It used to be that Christians were the main ones pushing progressive politics. Wasn't that long ago. It was a good Christian policy to try to make sure that the poor are taken care of.
Yep.
Now, fuck the poor. Because they're dirty sinners.
Yeah, libertarianism is true, like love. You know, that's the only way you can help anybody is by by not helping them in any way, shape, or form.
Right. And I would love for a Christian to point out where in the Bible Jesus says to pull yourself up by your bootstraps
and to
starve in the street
and drug test people before. I'm sure before he would help anybody, he made sure that they did not. Overindulge in wine.
Oh, man. In Oregon, at North Bend High School, two seniors, Liv Funk and Haley Smith, lesbians and girlfriends, were kept getting in trouble for walking off campus holding hands. There's a trail that they would walk that's off of campus where a lot of kids go to smoke. Because it's off campus.
Yeah.
And they would wait till they got off campus to hold hands and then still get in trouble. One of the police officers told them that they were going to go to hell for being gay.
Where is this again?
North Bend, Oregon, on the coast.
Wow.
When people think of Oregon, they think liberal.
Yeah.
That's
definitely.
Portland and Eugene. Portland and Eugene, like that whole area between them two is mostly
liberal. Oregon, like Idaho, where it's like we have Boise and Haley, basically, and somewhat Moscow because of the university.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah. It's about like that. And it's about like Washington, where the Puget Sound is liberal. Everything else is conservative. The difference is in Oregon and Washington, the biggest cities also have most of the population.
Yeah.
Idaho isn't there yet. Yet. It will happen.
Oh, the rate Boise's grown.
Yeah. But so this actually got even worse than just the school resource officer telling them we're going to hell. The principal did too. They went to the principal to complain about the cop, and the cop and the principal told them
reinforce.
He's right. Yeah. He's right. You're dirty sinners and you're going to hell.
how anybody in the day and age that we live in who has access to any media outlet can think that to say something like that, you know, whether they think, oh, it's just the world's gone PC or whatever, how anybody can think that is appropriate is beyond me. Like, like you should just know better.
Yeah.
As a principal of a school, as a school police officer.
Yeah. So they sued.
Good.
With the help of the ACLU of Oregon, the school district settled, which makes sense. It's a rural school district in Oregon. They don't have any money.
No.
Settlement's the best they can do. And part of that settlement is Principal Bill Lucero and School Resource Officer Jason Griggs getting fired.
All right. Yay.
Even if you're in a small town on the
Oregon
coast.
I've got to say, I do feel kind of bad that they have to lose their jobs because they are what I would consider borderline morally bankrupt. It's a bummer because they probably have families and stuff like that, and they're probably good dudes and everything. But man, I mean, come on, wake up, people. Like, you can't force your narrow beliefs on people. You just can't do it.
Yeah, if you want to discriminate against gay students, you should not be working in any school, let alone a public school.
Yeah.
I am also, if you want to proselytize to students, you should not be working in a public school.
Yep.
There are private schools that they could get jobs
at. They'd be very happy to have somebody with your opinion.
Now, of course, the school resource officer, that's a police officer. He's going to need to find a new police department. And because private schools don't hire cops, they tend not to have the money or even really any reasonable need.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love hearing from our listeners. You can email us at contact@atheistnomads.com, tweet us @atheistnomads, send us a message on our Facebook page at facebook.com/atheistnomads, or better yet, call us and leave us a message at 541-203-0666. We might even play it on the show. You can also help us out by leaving us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast directory of choice. And now for a discussion. Transhumanism. How familiar are you with this concept?
This is the idea that you are a different species.
Nope. Correct? No, that's a different one. That is otherkin.
Oh, no, maybe I'm not familiar with
it. Okay, so transhumanism is the basic concept is that you are looking forward to and eagerly awaiting and hoping for major technological modification of our bodies.
Ooh, okay. I've never heard that term, but this is definitely an area that piques my interest.
With the ultimate goal being uploading your brain into the cloud.
Yeah, I'm into it. Definitely.
Okay.
It scares the shit out of me. But I don't think we can survive AI if that happens to happen. So I want to be like in there with them.
So I think this will be a good discussion then, because I think it's absurd.
I can totally see how somebody would think it's absurd. You know, my biggest thing with it is that once it happens, like once your consciousness is moved to this place, it's not you. You die. Your brain shuts down. And so it's this copy of you that gets to live on as you. And I'm kind of selfish enough that I'd be like, no, I'm not having some guy that's not me thinking he's me running around being me. You know, that's my biggest hang up with it. But but there are just so many levels where it's absurd. But
okay, so the basic stuff like body modification, the prosthetic capabilities, the prosthetic potentials, I think are absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. The ability to have artificial eyes so that a person who has lost their vision or was born blind can see.
Okay.
The ability to have an artificial ear, you know, the some of the stuff they're starting to get to with direct brain interfaces.
What about the ability to have an advanced mathematical calculation computer put into your brain for work purposes?
So my base feelings on it are using it as a tool to extend assistive technology for people with disabilities is incredible, and it must be done.
OK, Okay. Can definitely get on board with that.
The area they're working on it for soldiers and in particular special ops and intelligence operators or operatives is to have a, and this is for, as I understand it, it's really close to being ready for trials or is already in trials. It's a regulator they embed into the person's, like the base of their skull, and it can report back to headquarters so somebody can monitor your vital signs while you're out in the field, and it can shock your, jolt your system with adrenaline if you need it to keep operating at peak efficiency, and in some cases actually treat potentially life-threatening situations with adrenaline, defibrillation, and the like. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's also, I also think it's kind of scary because the goal is to create, it starts with trying to keep soldiers alive, and everybody's going to get behind that. Where that goes is creating super soldiers.
Yeah, no, this is...
Yeah, that anything along the military line of this is just, is unacceptable. But, I mean, if you look at the world we live in, that's
where all the funding is
going to
come from.
That's going to be, mm-hmm. that's going to be where the development
takes
place.
That's where all the modern
place.
Prosthetic stuff is coming from anyways,
yeah.
from what was military.
Oh, it's, well, so you get the first level of it is funding to help soldiers be more effective killing machines. The second step is trying to help veterans who have come back missing parts of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third step is getting it out to
everybody else. So we watched, what, one or two episodes of Altered Carbon?
Yeah.
On Netflix. And the idea there is that they downloaded a guy who just died. I think he was a criminal of some sort.
Didn't he run for president or something?
I don't know. But like I said, it's been two episodes.
He's from House of Cards. He's... The guy that was running against Frank Underwood.
No, but
cards, sorry.
They downloaded his mind into a body that was that already had military fighting capability, like muscle memory built in. And they expected him to just, they owned him. He's like, okay, yeah. we can take you out of this body at any time.
He was a criminal, serial killer. And so they took somebody who already had those capabilities and put him into a body that also had matching capabilities
that they 100% owned. And so it's this guy who was Asian and then got stuck into a white body. That's kind of interesting. But and you know what happens when somebody has your life on a leash like that?
Yeah.
And you know that, you know, that's great if you could have a soldier with, you know, 40 years of experience perish on the field, download him into the next body and keep him going.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be all of our future leaders and politicians and generals.
Oh, yeah.
And rich people.
Well, and what they also have in Altered Carbon is he's owned by a Methuselah. These are people that are hundreds of years old who keep getting new bodies and downloading their, whatever the brain pack thing is, they download into new bodies and in the process accumulate ridiculous amounts of wealth.
All the wealth.
Basically, yeah.
It would be so much worse than what we would see with the modern rich families.
Uh-huh.
Because you just have the one guy, the one patriarch who would never give it up.
Uh-huh. It's not the 1%. It's the 100 who control 99.9% of all the wealth and live in a cloud city over the regular city.
Oh, geez.
Because they're that freaking rich.
Which is totally believable.
Yeah. We only have technological barriers keeping us from that at this point.
Exactly.
Now, I would actually go take a little different take on that. I don't think it's just technological barriers. I personally think us being able to interface our brains with technology is reasonable. I don't think there is any reason or any evidence to suggest that technology will be able to host a human mind.
Okay, like to recreate the same synapses and stuff like that, like the overall, like, because it's very chemical process. I mean, there's just so much chemistry going on in a human brain.
Chemistry can be replicated, though.
But there's the amount of complexity involved.
I want to download into a body that doesn't have depression.
Right.
And I have to admit, if I had the chance, I would totally go for a male body and just masturbate all the time.
It's not as great as you think. I've heard.
Oh, it's okay.
Not as great.
Eventually, it gets tiring,
and then I would be like, oh, okay, I want to go back.
At this point, I don't think there is any evidence that it is just technological barriers, because we're talking about something the complexity of which supercomputers don't even closely resemble.
But that is the technological barrier.
But that's even assuming that it's possible for technology to replicate that.
I think it will be. I think with the quantum computers, I mean, that's just jargon right now. That's just sci-fi, but I think it's possible.
Quantum computers are real.
Computing power, but to simulate like the biologic process that might be necessary to form a human mind, is that...
So the interactions that we have currently in our... to make us is you have the physical brain and its processing power. You have the stored memories. You have the hormones that are coming from other parts of your body and the hormones that are coming from your flora and fauna.
So you'd almost have to clone a human body and then have like a processor that could like run the calculations that a brain can run or something like that. So you're still having like those biological processes or something like Westworld-ish.
We haven't seen, so...
I need to.
Well, if they weren't on freaking TV channels that we don't have access
then...
Because what you'd have to replicate isn't just... It's not just running a program. It's... You would need to be able to emulate the wetware that is the human brain.
Mm-hmm.
Emulate it to a level that you still feel like you...
Okay, but that is assuming that you're going for a perfect copy. I'm thinking of it as more of like a problem of resolution, where right now we are living life in high def, but in order to maybe survive the next generation, you're going to have to downgrade to 8-bit. You are still conscious of yourself. You would still have your memories and maybe your knowledge.
And probably a lot of things would be cleaned up quite a bit too as well. I'm sure a lot of emotional stuff would be
erased.
Yeah.
Or controlled.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then as technology advances, then you're going to 16-bit, and then pretty soon you'll have the choice of having 32-bit. Now, those first people who choose the 8-bit version, they're going to sacrifice a lot, but I think that's the kind of research that's going to be enabled future generations to have a high def experience going from high def to high def. And I think that's really cool. It would at least make it for a good comic book.
Man, another fear too is like if you do lose the physical aspect, the biological physical aspect, right? And you live in a world where, like, say it's like Battlestar Galactica, where as long as you're within certain range of this thing, you're fine if you die, right? Or the unit that you're currently inhabiting gets destroyed, so your mortal body is gone. And how does that change your perspective? You know, I mean, that to me is one of the scary things, because suddenly certain things don't mean anything at all.
Gender, age.
Yeah. Well,
ethnicity.
Yeah.
It's like changing
all
clothes.
Those barriers are knocked down, and then all these things that kind of draw us together. All these things that keep us apart are knocked away. And then all these things that kind of draw us together are suddenly gone too. What does family mean if you can live forever? Mm-hmm. You know, what does friendship mean if you can live forever? What does loyalty mean? What does anything impermanent mean in a permanent existence?
In that scenario there, what does living forever even mean?
Is it really living?
At what point
our ability to imagine endlessness, I suppose?
Because if the idea is you live your life and then at the end of your life, you just move to the cloud, we'll come back to the cloud. I'm doing air quotes. That concept, by that point, your brain is degraded.
Mm-hmm.
So are you wanting to get your brain at 90 with dementia, but all those memories there?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you wanting to back up a copy of the software at 40, but then get all the memories from later? But if you mash those together, you're not you. Yeah, all of that was you, but that you're not you.
Right.
Well,
you're a different person.
You are, but I think you'd be fine with that. If I,
but I think, yeah, if like I if could you were, if you were
go oh. back to when I was 15 with all of my current knowledge, I'd do it. It'd be, it, I would be a different person and it would be hellish, but it like, would be a different
what,
kind
like
of
what
hellish.
What he's saying, I think is like at 90, right? Say you live to 90 and that's the point when you up your cloud, you've lost some of your sharpness, you know, mm-hmm. they're like,
right. Nobody in their, well, very few people in their right mind, air quotes, would do that. Nobody's going to wait until 90 to do, to even attempt this. This
okay.
Is,
so
initially it's going to be people who are probably at their peak, like 30
mm-hmm.
and, have suffered some kind of trauma and don't have another choice, don't have any choice.
So either that or
and
be
are
a
really
vegetable
rich.
Or
yeah.
Yeah.
You have the choice. You can either abandon this physical form and live in another one, or maybe just be put on ice for a while.
Except you're not abandoning your physical form. You are creating a copy of yourself and then committing suicide.
Yes.
Yeah, but your copy lives on, so
what
cares?
Happens if
that's
you,
when we first started this, I was like,
you.
I think I'm too vain to die and know that there's a somebody that thinks they're me running around there pretending they're me. Nuh-uh.
Okay. Well, you're dead. Who cares?
It's like the Star Trek transporter thing, you know, where you die and it's just a copy of you every time. It's like, I would never get in that thing because, like, that's it.
And the
you're
copy,
committing suicide every
now,
time you get
the
in
the copy
there.
Also requires that the original die because, also using Star Trek as the example, Thomas Riker, he's Will Riker, but doesn't have any of Will Riker's stuff because he wasn't there living Will Riker's life. If you create a copy of yourself, and let's say it's into another physical body that is, you know, it's a clone body of you, and you copy your brain into a fresh clone body, and then you get cold feet and don't off yourself at the end, does that clone get all of your stuff then?
Yeah.
Or is it still you?
Well, either the process would have to like be like kill you in the process, just to make sure. Or it's
have
like
some sort of legal thing worked out where it's like you relinquish the if you're going to do this, you relinquish the rights to your because you really couldn't bring that person in and then say no, I'm keeping all my stuff. It's like you're creating this person who's going to have needs and that's going to require your money.
And let's say you're married. You copy yourself and then don't commit suicide. Who's married to your spouse at that point?
Well, I think I just don't think that that's going to be much of an issue. I think we have to get there first and then worry about the legality of personhood.
Because
at that point,
let's
we don't know.
Let's not worry so much about can we do it that we don't stop and ask should we do it, okay?
No, let's just go ahead and let's just jump on that train and go.
I'm down. You guys, seriously, we got to figure something out for you guys to watch Westworld because they totally attack a bunch of this stuff in it. It's awesome.
That's awesome.
Now, I also think the whole thing reeks of religious type thinking.
Okay.
Because if it's a fun mental exercise of science fiction, it's kind of fun. It's interesting to think about. That's fine. Then you have the people like Jay Novella, and we discussed this when he was on the show years back, so I feel comfortable talking about it here. He knows it's ridiculous, but he's paid thousands of dollars so that when he dies, his brain is going to get chopped off and frozen.
He's the 8-bit. He's going to be the first run of people who are willing to sacrifice it all for science to see if we can do it.
No.
And that's awesome.
He is the person who is throwing away money so that after he dies, he doesn't die. Because there is something about humanity that at the point that we could grasp that we have limited existence, didn't like that idea.
Mm-mm.
And that's where religion came from. And I see in transhumanism way too many religious elements.
I see it very much. It is that need to escape from death. I think it is pretty obviously, like now that you pointed that out, a different attempt to try and escape mortality, like
absolutely
need to not leave the party.
I think people have a right to explore that.
It's my favorite. Topic of sci-fi is AI and cloning and those whole.
Now I think the companies that are taking people's money to freeze their brains are ripping people off.
Probably, yeah. Or they honestly,
it is a complete worst investment ripoff.
Or they honestly believe that they've figured it out and need test subjects, and so people are willing to pay them to do it.
No, they know they don't have it figured out. That's why they're putting it on ice. And
but they have no idea.
They're pulling a Walt Disney.
They have no idea if a brain on ice is going to be.
Oh, I know it won't.
Well, what's in there?
You can't freeze blood. If you can't even freeze blood, how can you freeze a brain?
Well, and just I don't.
You don't
have a great
literally freeze it.
Yeah, they're literally freezing it. Cold storage.
Oh. I mean, there are ways to preserve it, but
those are all inherently destructive.
I don't have the strongest grasp on how the human brain works, but from my understanding, there just wouldn't be anything that you could gain from a human brain at that point. Like, from my understanding, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, memories and personality and stuff like that aren't, like, a stored
thing. No, it's a process that involves chemicals, electricity. As soon as you interrupt that,
everything, it's like you
wipe so far,
it's like RAM,
there's nothing
right?
we can
like,
do to reboot it.
It's like RAM. It only works while it's running. You shut it off and it's gone.
Probably.
That's it. It's wiped clean. Like,
that's why there's a term brain death.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
That's been the understanding I've come to just from the limited reading I've done about it.
Yeah.
But there is the possibility of something around the corner being discovered that might change your minds. I don't know. That's why this stuff is fun to discuss, because it inspires younger people to look into it when they're a little bit older and maybe discover things that we thought was fantasy. I mean, look at where we've come in the past 100 years. If that were trend were to continue technologically speaking, knowledge wise, I totally believe that it would be something that could be seen in within 2 generations. Now, we know it's not going to keep going that way because, you know, a lot of that was government funded and the government's not funding that as much. But there's definitely still hope for that.
And I see it as wanting to upload your brain to the cloud is no different than a Christian wanting to upload their soul to the clouds.
I don't think there is much of a difference. And no, I think that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think the desire or that emptiness or whatever it is that religion is there to fill is a bad thing, you know? I think it's the way it's getting filled.
I think that's why people have children is a way to defeat mortality.
Yeah.
I don't have any delusions that my work is going to be remembered or anything, but that's one of the things I think about when I'm working in the shop is like, these are the only things that will survive me, you know? And only for at most 400 or 500 years, you know, if they're really well taken care of. So it's like,
yeah. And you know, I know I'm weird. Like, I don't have a problem with the idea of death. I think it is an important natural part of the process. Living life well requires it to be limited.
Yeah.
At the point that there's no limit, the pressures that actually get us to live go away. And It's one of those things I think it's necessary from that standpoint. It's necessary for the next generation, for the generation before them to die.
Oh, yeah.
That is always necessary. And that cycle, I think, is a very much a good thing. If we had one stagnant generation for
hundreds of years,
thousands of years.
Well, look at
what would our world
God,
be like?
God, we'd be cursed with baby boomers for the rest of time.
Yeah.
Look at the lack of progress we get with people just being in political positions for 30, 40 years, you know? But to have every single person in a generation that feels that way, yeah, live forever. Oh,
and
goodness.
Especially if every time you copy your brain, you can make some tweaks to it. So
enhancement!
And the government also makes a few tweaks to remove out the things that aren't good for society, and I wouldn't want to live in that world.
Like Lauren says, it's so amazing to think about. Like, it really is one of the most interesting things, and just the thought and like the idea that it's being explored and that stuff's going on. Like, I'm 100% on board, but I absolutely have the same apprehensions. You know, I mean, what does life mean when mortality? It doesn't play in, you know, I mean, what what does anything mean at that point?
I think it's
I think there's a lot of moral issues that will come about.
There's definitely
like going to
be tons of moral and ethical issues, but I think it's also an issue of perspective, that it is good that we cannot possibly understand what it would be like for somebody in 200 years. Just like we cannot really understand what is going on in the dog's brain. That perspective is lost. We have no way of understanding the world from another person or another creature's perspective. And I think that, you know, give it a couple hundred years, and if it starts to become a more of a normal thing, and then and it would be like changing clothes or something. It would just be the difference between somebody who has one suit in their closet and somebody who has 100.
Yeah.
But it's still fun. It's still fun to talk about. But
like 500 years ago, the idea of every person being able to participate in government, you know, was just it seemed like a world ending idea to people, you know, not everybody, of course. But yeah, over time, would things change? It could.
Society changes, and I think we would be amazed at
I think
we'll see.
We're definitely in the era where we're witnessing the beginnings of how corrupt that thing would be with the way how easy it is to monitor communications and stuff like that now, you know?
Yeah.
Look at you, Google!
Get immortality for 50% off or for free.
Google Tally.
With ads.
But Google will monitor your every thought and display ads in your dreams.
And share your information with, what's the word that they use?
Partners?
Yeah, there's a word that they,
partners.
Predicate that with. It's like interested parties or something. Yeah. It's like, oh, what does that mean? Like, so vague.
And yet I would still jump in. You know, I would totally do it.
I feel like it's like my biggest dream is it, but the whole thing is I know I would have to die or that I wouldn't have to die necessarily, but that once my consciousness was transferred, it wouldn't be me. It would be something else. But otherwise, if it was like the Stargate stones that can actually transfer your actual consciousness into something else, I'm 100% on board.
Like, well, we are really layering on the nerd here. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Star Trek, Stargate, Westworld, Altered Carbon.
It's the only stuff that's any good.
Twilight Zone.
Fiction is so scary and horrible.
And I love
like
it. I love it.
Well, we are out of time.
Yay. I mean, no.
I was just thinking, thank God I am exhausted, but I only got 4 hours of sleep last night. So.
Yeah.
I just want to give Rocco kisses.
Yeah, he'll give you lots of kisses.
Well, listeners, let us know if you like the discussion segment. This would also make it easier to integrate in interviews into episodes. And if you have suggestions on things you would like us to discuss in these, those are always welcome. But the basic concept is dusting off the degree or some kind of similar discussion that's a bit more...
theological?
I was going to say informational. Then news, and then a discussion about a topic. In some cases, it will be just a big news story that's happening where we want to be able to dedicate 20 minutes to one story. It will work that way. But in other times, it'll be like this, where we're talking about a concept where there's no right or wrong answer. You know, a lecture about transhumanism would be pretty boring.
The whole theological or the theistic mindset tie-in, too. You know, I hadn't even thought of it, and then, you know, you brought that up, and it's like, oh, yeah, of course. I mean, so that's interesting.
Yeah.
Justin, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
And Lauren, thank you for taking care of the baby and dogs.
Yay!
And that was not just normally, but during the recording, she was
I had to
up
step
quite
out.
A bit. And listeners, remember, not all those who wander are lost. Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find show notes and contact information at atheistnomads.com. Follow us on Twitter at Atheist Nomads and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/atheistnomads. Please subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcatcher of choice. And while you're there, feel free to leave us a review. Theme music is courtesy of Sturdy Fred. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.